This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
It is indeed. It is 108. Food for Thought is brought to you by New England Coffee, the official coffee of Food for Thought, newenglandcoffee.com. Also, Casey's Rib Shack, famous hickory smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue on 2nd Street, Manchester, online at ribshack.net. I'm Mike Moore and Carol Lawrence. My co-host is away today and tomorrow, so we have fill-in hosts. And today, it is Lakes Region Community College Director of Culinary Education from Shaker Village, Chef Patrick Hall. Welcome back, Chef.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tomorrow, Tracy Gregoire will be joining us. She's a staff member of The Pulse and definitely a lover of food. And so that's what we have for the next couple days. Tomorrow, our Comedy Cold Cuts theme or selection of topics is sandwiches.
Sandwiches.
Because, after all, August is sandwich month.
It is.
It is.
I didn't even know that. It's my favorite right there, you know?
What's the ultimate sandwich for you?
The ultimate sandwich? I love a Reuben. Like I said, a Reuben or what we were talking about, I think, last week was
Monte Cristo?
The Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah. So, but it's that or, you know what else I like, too, is falafels.
Oh.
I love falafel.
I'm not sure I ever had that.
Yeah, it's a ground chickpeas, and they fry it, and then they put like a little tahini sauce on there.
Well, there was a bit on Saturday Night Live maybe 3-4 years ago with Tom Brady dressed in kind of a genie outfit, and it was Tom Brady's House of Falafel. maybe it didn't have his name on it. It was just House of Falafel, and he was the spokesperson for it. Very, very funny stuff. Hey, we neglected to get just a couple last-minute beer announcements on because we know that if you're listening to Michael Hopley Pierce's Every Other Week segment on beer, you probably are interested in the events going on around town or the area. Tomorrow at 5 p.m. at New England's Tap House Grill, they're having a big beer event, actually a pig roast, I guess I should say, and I don't know if that's happening in the parking lot or in the building. That is a great restaurant. I used to live in Hooksett, and they opened up about 3 months before I moved out.
Oh,
now,
yeah?
One of my complaints about Hooksett was that just really wasn't much selection for any kind of dining, be it good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, no, I've been there before, and they have a great selection of beers, and then the smoked meatballs.
I've not had those.
Yeah, I got those there, and it's great.
So
yeah.
You've been there, you know it's good, and then it turned out I found out that they lived in the same subdivision as me, the owners of the
you
of
live the right around all these food people.
I know
people.
I do. So that's happening tomorrow, pig roast at the Tap House Grill on Hooksett Road, which is just a half a block up from Merchants Automotive Group, which you probably know all the cars, and across from Applebee's and behind Dunkin' Donuts, and the I think it's a Santander Bank is there. So you get the idea.
It's a little plaza.
It is a little plaza, exactly, and fantastic place to enjoy craft beers and some really, really good food. On the 29th, we talked about this last week with Seth. It's Hop Talks, and this is, think of the TED Talks, and maybe if you don't know what that is, it's a gathering of people that are experts in a certain area will give a bit of a speech or a lecture, and then they'll be sampling Q&A, and it's going to be a great learning experience and a chance for all hopheads to get together in one spot. That's at the Nashua Radisson. You can go to eventbrite.com to get your tickets. And on September the 12th, a couple weeks down the road on a Saturday, the Homebrewers Jamboree in Tamworth, homebrewersjamboree.com. And this is what I'd call a save the date type of announcement because it's 4 months away. There will be a 7-course beer pairing at, once again, the Tap House in Hooksett on December 7th from 5 until 9. Michael Hopley Pierce will have information on that in 2 weeks. So those are the announcements that we had hoped to get to you a little bit earlier. But now we're going to head west, young man or young woman, and visit with Linda Thompson-Ditch. And she is on the air every Thursday with us at this time with her perspective on Midwest dining. And, of course, she's got a good reference point because she was a well-known food writer and blogger here in New Hampshire. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Mike. Hey, Steph. How are you guys doing today?
Very good. Very good. It's nice to talk to you again.
You must be feeling pretty good after getting to taste all those great beers.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to savor the moment, so we were very good tasting beers.
They were terrific. I only tried one. I think he brought in two, or they brought in two. I got to try the one because somebody has to be responsible.
Well, we have to extend their segment. That's all.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody has to drive the show today, right?
that's exactly it. Well, I've got airbags on all the equipment here today, so
if I got this, Mike. Don't worry about it.
Oh man.
Did you see this week in the New York Times that there a little blip about? A new trend out now about hard root beer.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that one day. Remember, there's stuff that I saw there. It was like not your father's root beer. It's a hard root beer, and I think it's like 5.6% alcohol or whatever. I tried some of that, and I actually had some at home because my wife is more of a fruity drink. You know, sure. It's just a novelty to try some, and it tastes just like a regular A&W root beer. It's very sweet.
Okay.
I was wondering about that. I thought there's a Not Your Father's Root Beer, and I guess there's also one from Coney Island Brewing is another one. I guess they have one out.
That's true. I did hear about that one, too. Yeah.
And I was very curious because, you know, there's part you're like root beer in summertime, and you're thinking root beer floats, and I'm like, wow, a root beer with a kick. That could be fun.
The possibilities are endless, but the thing is, the scary thing is that it doesn't taste like alcohol. It tastes exactly like root beer, you know, 100%. And there's, you know, you expect there's like some sort of bite or something in there because it tastes just like
root beer. So you're getting the buzz, and if you don't know, you're wondering, what the heck am I drinking?
Yeah, scoop of ice cream like you said. I'm telling you. Someone's got to do it.
Well, one of the labels, root beer, is the bigger words on it. Now, I could see somebody, you know, going to fridge. Oh, cool, root beer, grab one, you know, and you definitely have to keep it on the shelf away from the kids because it could become a problem, I'm sure.
Well, I was checking your blog page just a little earlier today, and it seems that you are on a theme of adult beverages once again and some fruity drinks that either you concocted or stole from somewhere.
I concocted myself, thank you
very much. You did?
Yes, I did. The drink that I wrote about was a cantaloupe gin and tonic. And it's made with an agua fresca, a cantaloupe agua fresca, which if you're not familiar with an agua fresca, it's Spanish for fresh water. And what it is, you take fresh fruit. And if you've got kids especially and they like fruit juice, this is a great way to go because it doesn't have a lot of sugar in it. You take some fresh fruit, some cantaloupe, some watermelon, and I also did one with blueberries. You put it in the blender. You cut it up, put it in the blender, put a little bit of sugar, like a tablespoon. Depends on how sweet the fruit is. You put a squeeze of lime juice in there. Add a little water, like a cup of water. You blend that up until it's all pureed. Then strain out the pulp. And once you strain it out, you've got this pure fruit, you know, nectar, whatever you want to call it, that you can add a little water to, add a little seltzer to give it some bubbles. You can, you know, add whatever you want to it, but you've got this fresh, refreshing drink that is just perfect for the summer heat. And like I said, it's, you know, here you've got fruit juice that's come fresh from the garden or fresh from the farm stand, and you don't have to worry about having too much sugar because you're giving your kids too much sugar because you don't have to add as much or as little as you want. So, and it doesn't take a lot to make it sweet. So I thought, well, what a fun basis to add a little adult stuff to. And so I was cruising around the web looking at recipes, and I saw a thing for a cantaloupe gin and tonic, and it was made a different way. And I thought, oh, if you take that cantaloupe agua fresca, add a little gin, add a little tonic, I wonder how that would work. And it is so good. It tastes wonderful.
Have you experimented, Chef, with any kind of fruit drinks from scratch?
Yeah, we used to do some in, you know, the restaurant industry, you know, with the berry drinks and stuff like this. But this makes sense. You're thinking about that cantaloupe. I don't know if you've ever had the Hendrick's gin at all.
I love that. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, they make it with cucumbers. So it's kind of got that cucumber flavor to it. Like what I'm thinking in my head, just listening to this, is that you got that type of gin, but that cantaloupe and maybe a honeydew flavor would make sense to me. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, doing a honeydew with the Hendrick's gin with that little bit of cucumber flavor to it would be perfect.
Can you taste the cucumber in that?
You can't taste the cucumber in it. It's just brewed with it. But when you go to bars, they serve it with a slice of cucumber.
Oh,
now,
there you go.
You know, as far as the ones that I've seen so far, or the least they'll ask you with it. But you can't taste that much. But it's a pretty pricey bottle. I mean, you get like one of the large bottles. You're looking at $54 for one of those.
Like a growler or something.
Comes from Scotland.
Oh, so, it does?
Yes. Yep. So the distillery's over in Scotland. My wife was there a couple weeks ago, and she
bring some back?
They sell it here, so.
Oh.
Well, you know, you can make an agua fresca with cucumber as well. I saw some of those floating around. But whiz it up with some cucumber and maybe a little mint, and then strain it out, and then use a little of that Hendrick's gin in there and add some tonic to give it bubbles and a little bite to it, and I bet it would be really good.
Yeah, almost like even like if you was thinking also too is you do the fruit purees or any of that with some tonic water too. I mean, just a little light tonic water, so you still get that citrus flavor along with it too. You know, so.
Well, I like tonic because of the bite that it gives. So you could, if you like that kind of thing, you could use the agua fresca with the tonic water. If you don't, use a little club soda, a little seltzer water, and just if you want to give it some bubbles. And make it a little more fun. I like to add seltzer water to fruit juice anyway. And so with this, like I said, it's a more pure taste because it's just fruit and water, you know, basically. Like I say, I think the whole recipe, you add a tablespoon of sugar. So, you know, you don't even have to add that if the watermelon's really sweet or the cantaloupe's very sweet. So, I mean, it's fruit and water, but it's very refreshing. The first time I ever had this, I was dating, it was on many, many, many years ago. I lived in Dallas, and I was dating a man from El Salvador. And it was a very hot day, and so he whizzed up cantaloupe agua fresca. And it talked about a way to beat that heat, and it was just refreshing and light, and it was perfect for a hot day, perfect for a summer day. So why not make it grown up and add a little gin and tonic to it, too?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of fruit drinks, but I have to say what I saw in your blog post, it actually looked and sounded pretty good, something that I would consider trying.
Well, in the gin and tonic, when you add that tonic, it gives that bite, so it kind of cuts the sweetness of the cantaloupe. So, you know, where you might think it would be a little sweet, well, adding that tonic actually gives it a little bite to it, and of course the gin too, and with it gives us that little bit of juniper flavor. And depending on the kind of gin that you use, if you use Bombay Sapphire, which is very floral, you'll get a little more floral notes to it. Where, you know, if you use say a Tanqueray or something, you know, that's a little more straightforward juniper flavor. You don't get quite the floral to it. So depends on the gin, but you know, the gin and the tonic kind of cuts the sweetness of the cantaloupe, and they balance each other out really well.
No, it just flashed through my head when you were saying that is, you know, going away from the gin a little bit. If you take some of those berry purees and you know, strain them out, use it as that liquid, but then also make it with a little bit of rum chata and maybe some regular rum and add that to it, make it like a little creamy, berry, you know, texture to it.
Mm.
That sounds,
ooh, that would
just flash through my head. It just came to me.
Sounds very diabolical, Chef.
I don't know. This is weird.
You're going to be experimenting. Well, the blueberry agua fresca that I make, I like to make it into a blueberry mojito, which on the blog's Facebook page, I put that recipe for a blueberry mojito. And it's, you know, a little bit of mint with the rum, and it makes a great mojito with that little bit of blueberry flavor to it.
Yeah, and you know what? One thing that I was, you know, if you take blueberries and you take them frozen, all right, and you take them and you put them in a food processor or you know, and chop them up, and then you add some simple syrup to it, and it'll whip up. It'll make like a sorbet. Imagine dropping that into a glass with like some seltzer water and some of that rum, and letting it dissolve. There's a nice fresh, cool drink that you can have on top of that.
And it's healthy. It's a smoothie. So yeah. I mean, it's got to be good
it's
for you.
Good. I mean, I've been drinking for years, and I'm fine.
Yeah. You know? Still breathing.
That's right.
It's perfect.
Wow.
Perfect.
Hey, speaking of fruit, I got to ask you both a question and opinion on this. I'm because peaches are out now, at least in this part of the country. They're wonderful. They're fresh. They're juicy. I was thinking of trying to make a peach pound cake, and I was looking at the recipe. And again, lack of experience will show in this question. should I peel the, should I take the skin off, or should I just put it all in like that for my, because I'm going to, cut it up and put it in with the batter?
I would keep the skin on myself.
Okay. I never bother with peeling peaches. I hardly ever peel them in a recipe.
Because it's going to get soft anyway while it's baking, right?
Yeah, once you bake off, and it's just going to, you're just going to add fiber to it anyways. You know, that's all, that you're looking at. But, it breaks down, pretty much.
Okay.
And it'll kind of dissolve.
What I thought, but I said, I got two experts right now before I get my peaches, which aren't cheap, but worth every penny for the next couple of weeks. And then they're gone because I haven't found a store yet that sells soft peaches other than this time of year. And even a lot of the stores locally that don't carry local peaches, peaches are still hard, which is a travesty.
Yeah, no. The only way you can do that is leave them in a bag for the next 2 days. But it's not the
same. They're still not going to be sweet.
No.
You know?
They're bitter. They're
very bitter.
Yeah. Like you said, it's
not the same. The nice thing is, though, is if you're baking or cooking with those peaches, you can use ones that are a little firmer because they'll soften up as you cook.
Yeah, good
point. Or you can just puree them up and then add some vodka to it, and then you're all set,
We're back to that, huh?
Peach drink now.
Last year or the year before, I made a peach upside down cake, and it was really good. And I didn't peel those peaches, and they were a little on the firm side, and they came out great in the upside down cake.
Yeah, the nice fresh pizzas also come out well with when you're making ice creams too. Make a nice ice cream, and then if you did that pound cake with the peach ice cream on there, and then you could dry out some peach chips,
that would be yummy. It's hard to beat a nice fresh peach just eating it. And the juice is running down your chin and in your hands, and I like to cool it and put it in the fridge just for a little while and then give it a little chill. It's hard to beat just eating that peach.
Hey, before I let you go, again, a question for both of you. You mentioned a lot about using something to add a little bubble or a little carbonation to the beverages that you spoke of. Have either of you worked with those things where you can make your own soda at home? The carbonation infusion, would that be of any help with this?
Yes. I mean, that just popped in because I have one. It's really easy. I mean, you can make your own flavors. And like I said, if you use this, if you use the berry puree, like Linda's saying, and made water out of it, and then just all you have to do is crank it up on there and hit it three times, and it carbonates. And it comes in like a big 2-liter bottle. You can make it up ahead of time. Those are, I love them. So
they are, they're worth the money?
Oh, absolutely. Watermelon soda or cantaloupe soda or blueberry soda, peach soda. You can make agua fresca with peaches and have peach soda. Crank it up and way less sugar than the stuff you buy in the store.
If you're into all natural foods, there that's the way to go. Because you can make any flavor. You can make lime soda. You can make whatever you want, So
very cool. All right, Linda, how do we find you? How do our fans, your fans, we know you're on Facebook and your blog is?
It is There and Back Again Food. You can find it at www.thereandbackagainfood.com.
Fantastic.
And yes, I'm on Facebook, too, so you can look up Linda Thompson Ditch, or you can look, the blog has its own Facebook page, too, There and Back Again. There and Back Again Food, so you can find it there as well.
Always a pleasure to see what is on your plate or most of the summer in your glass. And we appreciate you sharing your tips and ideas and good personality. And we'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right. Talk to you then. Have a good one, guys.
You too.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Linda Thompson-Ditch from Topeka, Kansas, every Thursday right after the 1 o'clock news. And we are now at 1:26. I got a few things to chat with Chef Patrick Hall about, and we'll do that in our remaining half hour or so. Should also mention the phone lines are always open. If you have a comment on anything you've heard or would like to introduce something to talk about, there's nobody ahead of you right now. You can get through if you call 866-823-1077. We are The Pulse, WTPL 1077. It's Food for Thought. I'm Mike Morin, and I'll return with Chef Patrick Hall right after these words.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 1077 The Pulse.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back once again. Carol Lawrence, my partner on Food for Thought, away today and tomorrow. Today, Chef Patrick Hall from Lakes Region Community College, Director of Culinary Education at Shaker Village, is co-hosting again. Our show brought to you by Casey's Rib Shack, famous hickory-smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue on 2nd Street in Manchester, Grasshopper's Garden Center, New Boston. Go to them, grasshoppersgardencenter.nh, or I'm sorry, .com, and healthy solution spice blends. SpiceBlends.com is where you can find a really, really great website for all kinds of spice blend combinations, many of which are made without salt or sugar. So getting a little bit more bang for your buck, and the flavors have been matched perfectly. I use them a couple times a week because I'm too lazy to come up with my own spice blends because Shelly has done all the work for us. Quick reminder that this coming Sunday, Fire on the Mountain, the Henniker Rotary Organization is having their annual Chili Fest. And they've really changed it up this year. I know that lots of you probably have heard of it or may have gone to it. In the past, you would go to the ski lodge areas, the buildings, to do the sampling. Now, all that will be set up on the level lawn before the mountain starts to gain some elevation. So you'll have all your chili makers, both homemakers and the restaurants, the professionals will be there. And then there'll be a section where all the vendors are. There's going to be a classic car show. There's going to be a live band. Wow. And food aside from chili, I think you can probably get your basic, you know, hamburger, hot dog, Kona ice, and a beer tent or beer stand as well. I am a vendor this year selling my chocolate infinity cookies. Barb is going to whip up a very nice some lemon pound cake, very similar to what you get at Starbucks. We both like it so much, we went online and found the recipe.
Oh, no kidding.
So she's working on that, and I'm doing some of my kicked-up sriracha party nuts to sell as well.
Oh, no kidding.
Putting them in cups, people just walk around and eat them. I noticed being there as a judge the last several years, there aren't many people selling sweets or dessert-type things that after chili or hamburgers you might want to finish it off with something like that. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's quite an event. I didn't realize all that.
It's fantastic. Oh, it's great. They get 1,500 people, you know, if the weather's decent, and the last couple of years it has been.
Now, are you the only judges, or do they do it? Like, I know with Chowder Fest sometimes it's kind of like skewed because they got everybody from the restaurants. But he's like, yeah, you know, vote number two and vote number three. And
None of that. It's three judges, Chef Nicole of great New Hampshire restaurants. Nice. Also, Rick Broussard, who is the editor of New Hampshire Magazine.
And
I have a story in the current issue, by the way, at the September issue. And I also, and I'll be the third judge. And so what they do is they just bring us little 2-ounce portions, and they're numbered, so we have no idea who made them or anything about them. And we sample them, and we have probably a 7 or 8 point grading system in terms of, you know, flavor, taste, appearance, texture, aftertaste, heat, and all that kind of stuff. Sure. Then we add it all up, and it's strictly a numbers thing. So
is it restaurants that provide the chili, or are they just random people?
Though it's two categories. Restaurants can compete, and usually they've got about a dozen of those. And then there's usually 2 to 3 dozen home chili makers that have come from as far away as Nashville to participate in this.
No kidding.
In fact, I was sitting in an airport. This is maybe 3-4 years ago, and I'm reading the Philadelphia Inquirer, so I guess I must have been on a layover in Philly from somewhere. And there's a little story about it. This weekend at, in Henniker, New Hampshire, it's the Fire on the Mountain. So word is out there, and I think it's one of the more fun events
what
for
food.
What a
great place to have one, too.
Oh, no kidding.
My kids ski there all the time, but we've delivered wedding cakes there. In the summertime when they have weddings, and a lot of people get married on top of the mountain, come down and have their reception down below.
Yes.
But it's a beautiful place in the summertime that, you know, people just kind of look past. I think it's only skiing, but
exactly.
No, it's beautiful, yeah.
We think that the flow and the sampling of the chili will go faster because there won't be just two lines. There'll be the chili cooks all in an open area of the field under their tents versus in just a little area inside the lodge where people are kind of all squished together. I mean, there'll be a lot of people, and you'll still be in lines, but I think it'll be more tolerable. It's not supposed to be that hot this Sunday. No. I think in the 70s, and when you're up with a little bit of elevation, which you are at Pat's Peak, you know, that shaves another couple degrees usually. So it'll be a very comfortable day, and the money goes to do all the good work that the Henniker Rotarians do during the course of the year.
Oh, well, that's great.
So there you go.
And what day was that again?
This is this coming Sunday from roughly 11:30 to 5.
I might be back from Maine, so
we would love to have you come by. I think you would enjoy it.
Yeah, I'd love to come by. Yeah, definitely.
As an all-around food guy that you are.
I have a buddy coming over too, so he'll maybe we'll bring him up too.
The more the merrier.
Yeah. So
all right. So I got a couple things that we can bat around here. Do you collect cookbooks, or do you have a?
I have a ton of cookbooks, yeah. And you know, I don't collect them per se as like, you know, oh, I gotta have this one, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I said, even more at the restaurant and at the, you know, at the school, we get textbooks and we get cookbooks and
you get samples, right, from publishers that want you to buy them and use them for your class.
Yep.
So you've at least got one copy.
Oh yeah, yeah. And so we at one point in time we had to give them away. We had, you know, we put them out and let the students take them because we just had duplicates of everything.
Sure.
And people also, they drop them off to me.
Oh, they do?
Oh yeah. I've had three people, like, I don't know if they empty their houses or just three bags full of really good cookbooks too. Like, I mean, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just drop them right off, and I'm like, oh, wow.
Very cool.
You know, the old school cookbooks there, the Betty Crocker ones.
Oh yeah.
To everything. Yeah.
How many of us learned to cook, you know, at the Betty Crocker, you know, the red book.
And, yeah.
You know, yeah. One of my, we do have the Julia Child cookbook, actually, in a big kind of collector's edition. One of my favorites, though, is Cook's Illustrated.
Yes.
Because they have vetted all those recipes in their kitchens in Framingham.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, the chicken pot pie that I make comes out so good because I use their recipe.
They are very good. They're very, very good cookbooks, you know. And the Julia Child's one, it's funny, for my classical French class, I require that as one of my textbooks.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah.
And why not? I mean, how much of American cuisine sort of was based initially on the French style of cooking and flavor profiles and stuff?
Yep, that one in the Escoffier cookbook is the original one and of course, he was the grandfather of French cooking.
Yes.
And so, but then Julia Child's book is very similar. They have a lot of similar recipes to them, but it's pretty good.
I wonder what the degree of French influence on our cuisine would have been without Julia Child sort of becoming the face of that, and of course the television show, and she made it more approachable, and you know, so we didn't know all the words, but you know, Julia explained it.
I still watch those, you know. You can go online and go on YouTube and I'll use them as part of my lessons and things like that, and I'll laugh because, you know, it's imperfect, and that's what it is. You know, the biggest thing I find about people, and when they start asking about cooking, it's like, oh, they're so tied to the recipe, like, oh, I'm not gonna divert from this, and it's like, I'm like, just go for it. What's gonna happen, you know? Just you know, and it's watching people just, you know, and I think that broke that plane, like you said. But it's also just, it's great because I remember just hearing the song, you know, when you're a kid from the PBS. So it's great, you know.
866-823-1077 if you would like to contribute or ask a question of Chef Patrick Hall. Well, the reason I asked that 5 minutes ago, and we just kind of got off on a tangent about cookbooks, is Monty Farber and Amy Zerner, who, according to Publishers Marketplace, are well-known in the divination field, have teamed up with Chef John Okus to write a cookbook called Dining by the Stars. It explores the connection between astrology, wild nature, and its bounty, and how we as humans relate to and are shaped by those forces in our cooking and eating habits. So your thoughts on that? I mean, you either subscribe to astrology or you don't.
Well, the first thing, when you sort of said, you know, before you finished, you know, it said Dining by the Stars. I'm like, oh, here's another star cookbook.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
This is so, you see so many of the, you know, the famous people on there. Oh, I'm a chef now all of a sudden, like Boitano or something like that, you know. You ever see that one?
No.
Oh, yeah, he's on there. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. He's got, you run out of things to do or something?
That would be a great topic sometime. Who is the least most qualified person to do a cookbook that actually did one?
Oh yeah, some of the networks will air that, but this sounds interesting. I mean, if you think about it, you know.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I suppose it's not been done before, whereas everything else pretty much has been.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's because it's all, you know, it's just, it kind of goes back to the farm to table thing where you know you got to, you know, the start, everything that lines up and makes you what you like. You know, they say, you know, for astrology, you know, it's it makes you as, you know, okay, you're a Sagittarius, so you're like this type of personality or this type of personality, and then all of a sudden, you know, you got you know, you're different likes. So I guess it sounds like it would
now, what's your sign?
I'm Sagittarius. That's why.
So you're Sag, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Are you a prototypical Sagittarius?
You know, I always read. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I also read when you go to Chinese restaurants and you see on the thing that the year of, you know, I'm the year of the tiger.
You are.
And I think those describe it as well too. But I always read my horoscope.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty spot on. You can read into it so much.
Well, that's the thing, is you read into it.
And I can, well, yeah, I relate that. Yeah, absolutely. That happened to me the other day, you know?
So now they're tying the astrological approach to cooking and how you blend with the forces of nature to have what you eat.
I'd be interested to take a look at that, you know? Does it come with recipes? And
Sure. Yeah, it does. The book will be published by Harper Elixir and Eater, which is the website that found out about this. Eater has not been able to divine a published date yet. Ha, ha, ha. So there you go. The astrology cookbook by it's called Dining by the Stars.
By the Stars.
You know, kind of a clever play because it got you thinking that, yeah. You know, like Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, yeah.
Dining with the Stars. Now, yeah. one more quick thought here before we take a break on Julia Child. We played this actually several months ago on the comedy Cold Cuts, and maybe you've seen it on YouTube. Julia Child's visit with David Letterman.
Oh, no, I didn't. No, I'll have to take a look
This is when she was going to show him how to make a hamburger. They had a hot plate or a burner, a gas burner, propane or butane, whatever it is. And so she was going to show him how to make a really good hamburger, and it wouldn't light. couldn't get it to light. So basically, they ended up making, hamburger tartare, as she called it. And she made him eat, the raw hamburger after she seasoned it up and formed the patty. And you can just imagine all the wisecracks and all the comments. And she was as funny or funnier than him.
Oh, yeah.
So when you have a chance, go to YouTube and just Google Julia Child, David Letterman hamburger.
Hamburger, yeah.
And it is a scream.
Oh, yeah.
It was late 80s, so it's like 25 years old.
That's great, you know. Like I said, I get addicted sometimes to just being on YouTube and looking up some of these
things. No kidding,
when I talk about education today with students and how I use these videos, mm-hmm. that's how it's changed nowadays, you know. Back in the day, when you want to look up a recipe, you had to go to a book.
Yes.
Now these students nowadays have everything at the drop of the hand and videos to go along with it. So it's just so much more fun to educate students and say, look at this. This is how it's done. You know, those old videos. And you laugh. Of course, they don't know what, you know, what you're laughing at. You're like, I remember this when I was when I was young, you know. So, but
Technology is something that we all embrace or we all hate or somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Because for that purpose, for learning things, doing things, like when I wanted to find a peach pound cake recipe, you know, I had one from All Recipes and Food Network and 50,000 other ones.
Yeah.
And you have so many choices. Whereas, I would have had to probably gone to the library and find a cookbook or something or ask somebody like you for a recipe.
Yeah.
And now there it is at my fingertips.
Yeah, and you really want to do it. But, you know, also technology brings it back a little bit, mm-hmm. I find out too, because they have, a lot of times they have everything. They take advantage of it. So it's just like, they're not interested anymore. It's like, well, come on. This is amazing.
Yeah.
You're looking up things, quick.
I mean, how often do you ever find yourself in a kitchen preparing something, looking at your tablet versus having a book propped open?
Oh, yeah. If you've ever seen on tablets, there was some great, great tabs that, mm-hmm.
apps?
There you go.
Right.
The apps. I couldn't think of it.
Mm-hmm.
That you can look through.
Sure.
You know, Food Network's got a great one.
I probably need to get that on my cell phone or my tablet. Huh?
Oh, yeah. Betty Crocker has one, too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I have a whole bunch of them that are on here. Like I said, I'm holding up my iPod. And of course, I'm always looking at your Food Beast one. Now you got me going on
that. Yeah. What do you think of the Food Beast?
I just looked at one. They had these pizza bites wrapped in bacon.
Yes, I know.
And I was looking at that. But, yeah, Better Homes and Gardens. I have one on my food app. And then, these other apps that you can, search for restaurants and things like that that are all over the place.
Oh, and I have one to tell you about that's really interesting here.
Yeah.
When we come back, I'm calling this one Bar Roulette. It's an app.
Oh, really?
And it's pretty interesting. I think you'll like it. So we'll get to that and a few other topics in the waning moments of Thursday's Food for Thought. I'm Mike Moore, and along with Chef Patrick Hall, Carol Lawrence back on Monday. It's Food for Thought, 107.7 The Pulse, WTPL.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
1249, 107.7 WTPL, The Pulse. Mike Moore, along with Chef Patrick Hall, Carol Lawrence, my partner on the show, most days is away today and tomorrow. She's back on Monday. Thank you to Brad sending me a link to the accident we've been telling you about and a story of what happened. 93 North, just south of the Hooks of Tolls. This is off the New England Cable News website. A vehicle crashed into a toll booth in New Hampshire on Thursday afternoon, and the toll booth is reportedly in flames. So if you were driving there and you saw smoke, that's what it was. The accident occurred around 1:15, which is, 35 minutes ago. According to New Hampshire State Police Lieutenant Jerome Maslin, he said a single vehicle slammed into the toll booth, and the toll booth is fully involved. doesn't sound good. State police responding to the scene. The State Department of Transportation tweeted that the on-ramp is closed and the tolls are closed. Oh, really? No word yet on any injuries. Again, that's 93 North of Hooksa Tolls. A toll booth in flames, obviously a vehicle hitting it, and that's never good. So be aware. Avoid 93 North. 2 days in a row, people trying to go north on 93, even though this is, you know, 10 miles away from where it was yesterday in Concord with the sinkhole. That's the latest. So, and that story is 16 minutes old, so I'm going to say that's pretty current.
I know where I'm not going.
Yeah, that's right, because you're heading north.
Yeah,
right?
I'm heading north, but I got, you know what, I'll have to take the side roads.
Exactly, through Hooksett, Allenstown, Pembroke, and all that. So, all right, be careful out there. So we're into our final few moments talking about, you know, apps and things to use on the computer to find stuff that you need. Here's one for you. Can't decide where to drink tonight? There's a new app for that. Of course there is. Plus, it provides transportation as well. According to The Next Web, Bar Roulette, using Yelp and Uber APIs, randomly selects a bar on Yelp and then sends an Uber to pick users up.
No, I've never used Uber before.
I haven't either, but I would try it if it makes sense.
Yeah,
I would absolutely try it. So anyway, it selects the bar, and then it sends a car. I like that. Most impressively, the app checks if the bar is open before sending the user there. Currently, the app is only available on the web, but the team says the app they're working on, there will be an iPhone version soon, but it isn't yet. So let's say you're just in some town, you're by yourself or with friends. All right, just it's roulette. It'll pick the bar. It'll check to see if it's open, and you don't have to pick up the phone to get your ride. Uber will be right over to get you.
That's pretty good, especially if you're in a city or something that you don't know pretty much about, you know.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We'll go to Detroit and we'll try that. How's that
sound?
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah, I need to get back and see my family pretty soon. Not a bad idea. All right, so you're the right age for this conversation. Yeah. Simpsons, were you a fan? Are you a fan?
I was, you know, it was funny. I was earlier on, you know, like, but you, like now you've kind of lost, I'm definitely a fan of Family Guy.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm a Family Guy, person. So I think that took over for me. But the Simpsons were earlier on.
Well, this is really cool. And you have to check it out online. One Canadian couple is bringing the Simpsons to life inside their kitchen. According to the CBC, Marcia Andrechuk and Joel Hamilton are redoing the kitchen in their Calgary home so that it looks just like Marge's from the show, right down to the corn cob curtains, which Andrechuk sewed herself. The kitchen also features the same checkerboard tiles, cartoon knobs on the cabinets, and pastel purple paint as Marge's. The couple jokes about turning their basement into Moe's Tavern.
Oh, my God. I wonder if they'll have Duff beer.
Well, that's a good question. Needless to say, the couple are super fans of the show. Hamilton explains, "The Simpsons for me is actually a baby blanket. If I'm not feeling well and I'm depressed, if I have a bad day, I come home and pop The Simpsons on and everything is all right." For now, the couple has covered their appliances with just the right shade of neon green contact paper. Really, I would think you could go on Craigslist and find an avocado green appliance.
Oh, yeah.
If you needed to. And I think that's what they're going to do. But they're currently in the process of saving to buy two retro-inspired olive green appliances to make the renovation as accurate as possible. The couple jokes that they are going to transform their basement to Moe's Tavern from the show, which seems like the perfect place to store cases of Duff beer.
Oh, there we go.
You're ahead of me on that. The couple aren't the first people to bring The Simpsons into the real world. In March, a fan named Carolyn MacArthur changed himself to snack like, he challenged himself to snack like Homer Simpson, the main character on the show who is known for his penchant of eating and managed to keep up pretty successfully. Anyway, CBC is where you can find it online. Just put in Simpson Kitchen Retrovention or whatever, I suppose. And that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, that does sound pretty cool. Yeah. I'd be interested in seeing that. Are they going to produce, like a cooking show? Is it?
Well, that would seem to be the next the next step. I think these are just two folks, and somehow somebody got word of it. Probably got up on Facebook, and then some producer from the CBC said, "Oh my God, we got to do a story on this because it's visual."
Yeah.
And who doesn't love The Simpsons? I mean, the show's been on since '89.
Do it here.
Yeah, we're sitting in a kitchen-themed studio. And the clock on the wall, which is a rooster with funny-looking claws, is pointing to us to leave.
Uh-oh.
But that means that Ken Kale and Kale & Company will be joining us from the Beacon Street Studios in just a couple of moments. He always has fun things to talk about, interesting guests, and I'm sure today is no exception. Chef Patrick Hall, you'll be back again next Thursday to join us as my co-host while Carol takes a few more summer days off.
Absolutely, and I appreciate it. I thank you. I don't know what I'm going to do when these Thursdays are all over.
Oh, we'll find something for you to do.
Good. Exactly. I'm glad.
All right, so. Chef, thank you. And everybody, have a wonderful day. Stay off 93 North, south of Hooksett, because as of a half hour ago, one of the toll booths was on fire and things are not moving. Drive safely out there. I'm Mike Bourne. See you tomorrow on Food for Thought, right after the 12 o'clock news. Take care.